Hey everyone, this is Jeff Saldenstein, and in today's interview, we are going to talk about the Buggy Whip forehand. Now, I've released a course called the Buggy Whip Blueprint, and we've put this interview inside that course for all of you to listen to. And I've got a special guest today. I've got a player who is a former player, now turned high-performance coach, also a high-level touring coach as well. This player slash coach was one of my contemporaries. He was an all-star in the juniors. By the time he was 18, he was winning Kalamazoo and turning pro and had a very successful pro career, reached a career high ranking into the 60s in the world on the ATP men's tour. He's practiced with Sampras, Agassi, played against him several times. He really played with the big boys. He understands the game. He has a wealth of knowledge to share now. He also was the coach for Maria Sharapova for 6 years when she made her great run on the tour as well. So this is a guy who has seen it all as a player and as a coach. He's got many more great things that he's going to be doing in the next couple of years that we'll talk a little bit about as well. But today we're going to talk about the Buggy Whip forehand. Michael Joyce, welcome to the call.
Hi, Jeff. How you doing?
Doing great. Well, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you've got a player that's rehabbing an injury, and you're taking a little break from that, helping her out to talk Buggy Whip forehands today.
Right.
So
no problem.
Let's jump right into it. I know, again, as a touring coach and as a junior coach that's really passionate about the game, you definitely have strong opinions, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on the Buggy Whip forehand. So let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to what you noticed about yourself as a player. And then obviously you've got some inside scoop to share with our listeners since Robert Lansdorf was one of your main coaches growing up. And he worked with many players that also utilized the Buggy Whip forehand, which another term is the reverse forehand. So why don't you just tell me a little brief history about the SoCal reverse forehand?
Yeah, well, actually, Robert, that's what Robert called the reverse forehand, but it's, you know, it's basically the same thing. But what I found interesting is I actually saw some pictures of myself when I was like, 16, 17, 18, whatever. And in a lot of pictures, I was actually hitting that forehand, you know, and typically hitting it on the run. And, you know, but I was never really like taught to hit that shot, you know. And so obviously, Pete, you know, Sampras probably was one of the first players that did it extremely well. And in the women's side, like Davenport was one person that did it. And I actually put a lot of thought into it because I started to think, like, is this something that I learned or is it something somebody told me to do? And the one thing that I came up with was one thing we did with Robert a lot when we were younger was, you know, he would feed us a lot of balls on the run, you know, like at the baseline or 20 at the baseline. And his big thing that he always, you know, made sure we did was he wanted us on the run to rip the ball, you know, to hit the ball, not always, you know, a lot of people are taught on the run to, you know, moonball it back or lob, you know, whatever. And he always wanted us to, you know, on the dead run to swing pretty, you know, just as hard as we can and stay loose and so forth. So what I started to think was probably if you actually are running wide and hitting your forehand full out, you know, nowadays people hit a little bit more topspin and so forth, but if you got the racket head speed going as fast as possible and your weight is carrying you to that side of the court, you pretty much have nowhere else to finish, you know, kind of just naturally does that, you know. And obviously, as tennis has progressed, I think we're starting to see it more and more because I feel like the players in general are hitting more angles. You know, players are off the court a little bit more. You know, 25 years ago with the rackets technology, the players couldn't create as many angles, weren't on the run as much. So I think in the modern game, it's a shot that, if used at the right time, is crucial to a development of a junior or, you know, at the pro level.
Well, you said a ton there. I have lots of questions in my mind, but I'm going to stay on track here. So we talk about one story I often heard. I don't know how accurate this was, that one day Sampras was on the court with Lansdorf, and he pulled him out wide. He was probably screaming at him while he was pulling him out wide. And all of a sudden, he flips his racket over his head and uses the reverse or the buggy whip. And Lansdorp is like, what the heck did you just, what are you doing? What is that all about? And basically giving him a hard time. And Pete's sitting there going, well, I just hit a blistering winter. I don't know what I did, but I just did it. Let me try it again. And so I don't know how accurate that is, but, you know, some things in life and in tennis, you hear about Andy Roddick when he was 16, he got mad one day and threw up the ball and crushed a serve. And now he went from having a crappy serve to a great serve. So a lot of tennis is exploring and experimenting. And if that story is true, it sounds like Robert had a very talented player and he was working on a running forehand that he knew he needed to have. And then this new this shot evolved. That, as you said, I mean, Rod Laver, there's pictures of him and videos of him using the buggy whip forehand. So it's obviously a natural motion, but, you know, it's pretty cool to see that, you know, you can learn something just basically by almost accident or by experimenting.
Right,
what's your take on that?
No, absolutely. Like what you mentioned with Roddick, I mean, I know that story is true. You know, the story with Robert and Pete, it's definitely a possibility. One thing I do know that Robert, because I started taking lessons with Robert when I was like 8 years old, and he taught, you know, back then it was Tracy Austin and, you know, Chris Evert and Jimmy Connors. And so, you know, he taught, obviously back then, you know, everybody was hitting more or less closed stance and, you know, follow through out in front. And, you know, that's how tennis was back then. And, you know, I always worked with Robert, you know, from 8 years old, even up until when I was in my early 20s, when I'd come back in town, I'd take a lesson with him or, you know, just to, you know, make sure my mechanics, and he was a very good mechanical coach, so make sure my mechanics were all right and footwork and so forth. And so I saw, you know, we're the same age, so I think we were both kind of taught a certain way, and our games kind of had to develop a little bit with the time, because between the ages of, you know, let's say 18 and, you know, 30, tennis changed a lot. You know, the rackets changed, the players changed, the athletes changed. So I was kind of, you know, I think we had to make changes. I mean, I had to, I hit a really flat. If you watch the tape of me when I won Kalamazoo, when I was 18, I had a great two-hand backhand. My forehand was always very, like, kind of mechanical and straight. And I mean, it was a good, solid shot. But to get the racket head speed and so forth that I needed, I actually worked a little bit with Jose Higueras for a couple of years where, you know, he helped me get a lot more spin on my forehand. And then, again, by having that spin, it just increases your racket head speed. So, in general, obviously when you're on the run or you want to hit an angle or you want to hit a cross from lob, again, that buggy whip or reverse forehand really comes into play a lot. And so it wouldn't surprise me if that story with Pete is true, because I do know that Pete would go see Robert, similar to me. I mean, he was, you know, number one in the world when he was 18, 19, but he'd go take a lesson from Robert every now and then, because Robert's really the one that taught him the strokes. The one thing that I think Robert did a really good job, which I wasn't necessarily around, but I know when he started to work with, like, Lindsay Davenport and when he started to work with Maria, both those girls were very tall. You know, I mean, well, as they got taller, let's say, Maria had a big growth spurt when she was, like, 15. Lindsay was always tall. And both of them had incredible backhands, naturally incredible backhands. Both of their forehands were always big weaknesses, and they always – tended to also, because they're tall, hit the ball late. And I do know that Robert started to spend a lot more time with them actually practicing that shot, because he felt if they catch the ball late, that they'll be able to, by, you know, falling through more over their head or doing the buggy with forehand, that they'll be able to continue to have good racket head speed. Because by, you know, catching the ball late and slowing everything down, you know, you're in trouble and you start to guide the ball or push it or whatever. So I think that's where Robert started to actually make it a little bit more of a, like, conscious effort to actually work on it, because it was obviously a shot that really helped them, because the fact that they're not so fast, that they hit a lot of balls late, it really helped them. When they're on the run or a little bit late, it's a crucial shot for, you know, for effectiveness.
You know, you made a great point there talking about being late. And, you know, this program, we've got a lot of recreational players and junior players that are going to get their hands on this buggy whip program that I've created. I've actually shown 19 different ways that you can use it in the court. That's just me being the analytical type that studies the game left and right. But
Stanford,
you know, you can Stanford baby. you can hit the shot on the dead run. You can hit it when the ball is low, a short little flick kind of. You can.
I love
the ball gets.
I love hitting.
Yeah, you can.
I tell
hit,
my players
exactly.
All the time. Yeah. You know, sorry to interrupt, but the girls,
yeah.
A lot of girls I know struggle with the, when somebody hits them a slice. They right off the bat slow down the racket. They almost start panicking when they see a slice come. And when I tell them to go ahead and hit the buggy whip off of that slice, it really starts to, you know, get their confidence. It gets their racket head speed going. That was a shot that Maria used, you know, because you can create a much better angle. You know, you can create a better angle. You don't have to worry about, like, guiding or slowing the ball down. So there's, you know, obviously, like you said, there's 19. If you found 19, that's probably just about all of them that you can use on. But 19, there's definitely a good 19 times that shot really comes into play.
Well, yeah, and again, what I was mentioning is that, you know, this shot, if you're late on your forehand and you're a recreational player, you're a junior player, you're a pro, this is like I say, it's like your get out of jail free card. You can
right.
be late and still hit some great shots. Whereas before, if you didn't have that shot in your toolbox, you might be limited. You might miss that shot outright. And what you mentioned about the slice. You know, you're allowed to you can get under the ball and outside the ball. And I know that you actually use the buggy whip as a training tool, probably for the regular forehand. Is that how you use it, to get them to use that shot to feel what it's like to get outside the ball, get under the ball, get the ball over the net, create more spin, create more angle, and then you're like, hey, go hit your regular forehand now and see how it feels. Is that how you do it?
Exactly. I mean, I can tell you at least 50 to 100 times when I was coaching Maria where, for instance, she would play a match and, you know, maybe she was kind of tight or nervous or, you know, whatever. You know, she would maybe get through the match. But then I take her out in the afternoon or even the next morning before she played, and I'd have her just hit 20, 30. You know, like we call it a reverse forehand, just even from the middle of the court, even though I don't think that's necessarily a great place to hit it from. I mean, I know some of the guys or Nadal or whatever does it, but I'd have her just do that to loosen up because I'm a big believer that you get power from racket head speed and from being loose. So I've actually had people also just drop the ball and swing and do the reverse, just like out of the basket because, you know, just out of the hand, because basically what you're doing, once you have to worry too much about a follow through or stopping the racket, I feel like it's going to affect your racket head speed going through the ball. And I'm a big believer that your racket head speed is what gives you consistency, what brings the ball. The ball comes, you know, comes into the court by the spin, not by slowing the racket head speed down. So I feel like under pressure, that's where Nadal, I feel, has a big advantage. A lot of times in pressure situations, even more so than even a Federer per se, because his natural spin, you know, he actually under pressure maybe sometimes uses too much spin, but it's natural for him to go keep the racket head speed going fast, you know. And so, you know, to me, under pressure, or if you're on the run, or if you get a slice, a ball that typically maybe you have a little bit more time on, that's when I tend to, the people I work with a lot of times, that's when they tend to slow down the racket head speed. And then under pressure, that's where your feet stop moving and everything. So I feel it's kind of like makes you loose. It kind of loosens you up. It loosens up your grip on the racket. And typically when I do that with somebody for 5-10 minutes, when they go hit their normal forehand, it just seems to click much better.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, looking at the pro game now, obviously, I've even seen Serena Williams use the buggy much more in the last couple of years. I know Pete Sampras, I've watched old tapes of him, and when he was 19, 20, maybe he used the reverse or the buggy whip on the running forehand, but generally he was over the shoulder on most forehands. But by the end of his career, he might have been 50, 60, 70% of his forehands were buggy whips. And I think that maybe he lost a little confidence, or maybe the game just sped up. And he felt like
set up. Yeah.
And he felt he was late. Yeah, he felt he was late.
I put a lot of thought into it, to be honest, because I remember Robert started talking about it. And at first when he started talking about it, I was almost a little like, and then he kind of like started almost saying like he invented the shot and stuff. And it kind of pissed me off almost a little at first, because I was like, well, Robert, I mean, I have a million pictures of me hitting it, and you never even mentioned it, you know. And so, and then with Maria, he would actually work on it with her a lot. Because when I first started with Maria, she was still taking a few lessons from him now and then. He would have her hit that shot for 20, 30 minutes in a lesson. And I was actually trying to get her to not do it so much, because that's another thing, too, with Maria. I think that's the misconception. You know, I think a lot of people think that you actually follow through over the same side of you know, your shoulder. Like if you're right-handed, you actually follow through over the right shoulder. I think, you know, Maria almost does that a little bit too much. I think you still kind of follow through out, and then just the momentum of the racket kind of takes, you know, the racket head over, kind of over your head, more or less. And so with Maria, I was actually trying to have her not do it as much as she was doing it. But then I realized how often she got herself out of trouble and how great a shot it was. So I think as the game has gotten, you know, has developed, and obviously the rackets and the topspin and the angles and stuff that people can produce, it's probably why Pete, as he got, you know, later in his career, he started playing, you know, these guys like Hewitt and Agassi and so forth, guys. Maybe he lost a step. I don't know. But when you're on a little bit more on the defense or late, he probably felt like that was the best way that he could generate the power and control on that shot.
You know, I've noticed that, you know, Pete, besides his serve, I feel like his running forehand was probably the most devastating shot in tennis besides his serve. And you obviously faced it. And I really believe – you know, when you look at his matchups and even guys like Courier and Agassi, who were great off the ground, but, you know, when you got those two guys running wide to their forehand, and you can tell me if this is correct because you played both these guys.
They were not
great out wide on their forehand, where they're much better in the center of the court or running around and hitting the backhand corner. And I really think as the game sped up and guys started figuring out how to play, if they could get Agassi or Courier wide to their forehand, they were in a much bigger jam than a guy like Sampras, who he almost baited you to go over there.
Well, that's exactly what he did. I played him twice. I lost him in five sets one year in Australia, and then I lost to him in straight sets in Indian Wells. But that's exactly what he would do. He would actually, like, keep that side of the court open. And, like, you know, and you'd see out of the corner eye that, you know, this big space is open, and then he'd almost want you to hit it there. And he killed Agassi with that shot, too. Besides the serve, what would happen, Agassi would see that opener, he'd use his downline backhand, and Pete would just go over there and crush that shot. And, you know, actually the one guy that had a pretty good record against him and did pretty well against him was Courier, because I think Courier was so disciplined about, you know, keeping it to his backhand side. And even though that side was open, he wouldn't, you know, he would almost just keep going to his backhand, like almost take that shot. And plus, Courier didn't have a good downline backhand. So Courier, I felt like, you know, game, I don't know what the records were, but like game-wise, I felt like Courier knew how to play Pete better than, let's say, Agassi would see that open and be like, screw it, I'm going for it, you know. And that's where Pete, you know, it's exactly right. He baited you on that shot. Of all the players I've played, I mean, I've played Agassi and Sampras and Courier, and of all the guys I've played in that generation, there was no doubt that Pete's running forehand was by far the best, you know, of anybody I've played. Because he could hit a clean winner off of it, you know. Most people are going, you know, over to the side and, you know, getting it back, or some guys were slicing it, but whatever. But he could go over there and hit it Mach 50, and, you know, and he definitely was one of the first guys that could generate power from that position, you know.
And probably one of the first guys that actually consciously practiced it instead of it being random. He probably actually spent time on that shot. And now you're seeing today's game. You got Nadal hitting the buggy whip on 75% of his forehand.
Right.
And you certainly see, you know, Murray and Djokovic and Federer using it when they get pulled out wide. But if you're working with a player now, how do you determine you know, let's say a rec player or a junior player, would you want him just to, him or her to use it on maybe 20% of balls or maybe balls on the run? Because there is a danger of, you know, using it too much and actually forgetting that you have a normal forehand to hit as well.
Right, right. Well, yeah, that's a great point, because one thing that I feel like, you know, tennis, especially some of the juniors now stuff, need to improve on and, you know, and something that's kind of been a little bit of a lost art, I think, is maybe partly because of players almost doing it too much, is I always feel like if you have time, or if you have a ball that you're, like, coming in off of, I know Nadal sometimes has, like, a put-away and he uses it, but he's a little bit of a rarity. Like, I feel like if you have a ball that you can move in or you're coming in or you're hitting an approach shot, per se, it's not a great time to use that because, number one, I mean, the whole point, you know, usually when you follow through on that ball, you're a little bit, like, almost, like, you could almost be falling backwards or you're a little off balance. Like, that's the whole point to kind of use the shot in the first place. So if your body weight's coming in, so if you have time and you're hitting a ball where you're coming in, or if you're running around in like an inside out forehand where you're kind of moving forward a little bit, to me that's not the right time to do it. So what I try to do is have my players so they're not thinking about it too much. I mean, it's something you can work on obviously and think about it, but then when you play you kind of, you know, want to let it, you know, happen more naturally, is I always kind of tell my players that when they feel like they're late, like if sometimes another time it's a good time to use it, like even if the ball's down the middle but they're caught like on their back foot a little bit, you know, it's a good time to use it because, again, you're getting the racket head speed back. I think if your racket head speed is going fast but and your weight's not necessarily going in the court, I feel like that's the best time to use it. So, you know, so what I try to do is I do some drills where I'll feed, like if I'm feeding balls where, you know, I'll feed all different kinds of balls, not so they know it's coming, kind of so they're off balance on purpose, you know, and try to get them to feel like, you know, if I hit the ball hard and deep and they use it, great. If they're moving and they hit it, great. All of a sudden I'll give them one where I feel like they need to step in that ball and be more aggressive on it, then maybe they, you know, they wouldn't use it on that particular one. And, you know, if you have somebody feeding you balls where you're working on all those different shots, then naturally I think over time you'll be able – it will become more of a – you know, you'll be able to use it more at the right times, you know. Also, like a return to serve. Sometimes if you're a little bit off balance, you know, maybe it just happens naturally. But I feel like on the return to serve, you should always be feeling – you know, have the feeling more of moving forward, being attacking the return a little bit more. And if you have that feeling, then obviously you might not be using it quite as much as you are if you're on the defense or on the run.
Yeah, good stuff. As always, Michael, thanks so much for your time and for giving us that valuable insight. I mean, it's amazing that you, when you look back on your playing career and even coaching career, you were on the court with some of the greats as a player. You worked with arguably one of the greatest coaches of all time. And then and then you've spent so many years with Maria. You just have so much insight and background information to share with people. So thank you for opening
Absolutely.
That up to us.
Tell
the listeners real quickly before we end this call today what you're up to now and some new developments that you might want to share about what you're going to be doing with your coaching maybe the next couple of months, next couple of years, and where things are heading for you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm real excited. I've been the last couple of years I've been working with a young American girl named Jessica Pagula, and she was doing real well last year. She got up, she was 19 years old, and I started with her right after Maria when she was 17, and she got up to about 115, 110 in the world, and then she injured her knee at Wimbledon, took a slip like 30 other players did at Wimbledon last year. I don't know what's going on with the grass, but So it's been a tough road. We thought I was getting better and, you know, a few times and we got her to the point where she was almost, you know, 100% and then it would start bothering her again. And so we finally went to a doctor who suggested that they do surgery. So last week she actually had her surgery on Thursday and they figured out what the problem is and she's going to be back 100%, but it's going to take a few months. And so in the meantime, I've been to Charleston. I live in Los Angeles, but I've been to Charleston, South Carolina a few times. They have that big Family Circle Cup tournament there for the women. And then I've been there. A good friend of mine, this guy, Brian Minton, he runs a tennis academy there. And it's pretty small, but he's had some really good success with some players that have come out of there. Shelby Rogers was one of them. And a few guys went to college. A few guys play on the tour now. And so they asked me if I'd be interested in joining forces with him and this one other guy, Jeff Wilson, who's had an academy in Atlanta. And so basically we got the lease for the facility there for 10 years. So I'm actually going to move there in two months so that I can still, you know, I'm still going to work with Jessie. I'm still going to be her main coach, but I'm going to overlook the, like, pro division basically there. So I'm going to invite a lot of pros to come in and use that as a home base to train and to practice. The weather's good year-round. Facilities are great. And then I'll be able to keep an eye on some of the younger kids and some of the juniors when I have some free time. And hopefully, you know, down the line, we'll be able to get some great players coming out of there. I'm really excited about it.
That sounds great, Michael, and I'll be sure to come check you out in Charleston.
Absolutely.
And, best of luck with all that you're doing with your players, and thanks again for sharing your time and your expertise today.
Anytime, Jeff. Thanks, buddy. You're the best.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.